Welcome to the Star Coalition podcast. My name is Luke Kramer, the executive director of the Star Coalition. We are so glad you're here with us as we meet with some of the greatest minds in advocacy, research, and the treatment of those living with central nervous system disorders, such as schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, and other indications. We're really excited today to have with us Tom Starling. He is the president and CEO of Mental Health America Mid-South, and also the chair of the board of directors for MHA National. Thank you, Tom, for coming in and spending a few minutes with us today.
Thank you, Luke. Thanks for inviting me.
You know, I'll tell you what, over the years, I've had the great pleasure to work with both on the national level of Mental Health America to your state, all the way down to the affiliate levels. And I have to say, I have fallen in love with so many of the individuals from the leadership that you have in Paul Gianfrido to the work that you're doing right in Tennessee. You know, MHA has a really unique place in the advocacy circles. And I could you maybe spend just a couple of minutes telling us a little bit more about MHA and where it fits into the advocacy voice?
Sure. So nationally, Mental Health America, which was, I think, prior to 2009, more known as Mental Health Association. But MHA, we've been around for 110 years. We were started by a gentleman named Clifford Beers, who had lived experience with depression, bipolar. He actually admitted himself into an institution that, back then it was more like an asylum or a prison. And sure. When he got out, he wrote the president of the United States and said, "This was just deplorable. I needed health and recovery and treatment." And it took a lot just to get me out of that institution. And he actually founded the National Mental Hygiene, back then Mental Hygiene Movement, Mental Health Movement back in 1909. And at this point today, we have 200 affiliates. We're still not in every state, but every affiliate is incorporated as a nonprofit. In some states, there's one. In some states, every county has an MHA affiliate. But one of the things that I'm most proud of is when we started, we weren't focused on the illness. We were focused on prevention, early intervention, recovery as the goal, and kind of integrated treatment. And so that's been our focus the whole time. And so there will be, you know, other brother and sister organizations that we hold hands with to do programs, to do advocacy, work alongside of, that are more focused on a particular illness or certain illnesses. But ours has always been prevention, early intervention, treatments, and recovery.
And also the unique place I think that MHA really delves into is policy. They seem to have a really great voice when it comes to legislation and working both nationally, state, and locally with politicians, with policymakers. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about how MHA is involved in that. And I know that was part of the early mission of MHA as well, correct?
It has been. We have found that advocating for people, being a voice for people, has been a concept since our inception. We want to continue to create good policy, safe policy, respectful policy, and that's really part of our what we call our before stage four commitment. And that is just like you would never want to wait till stage four cancer to then start treatments, or stage four kidney disease to say, well, we've purposefully waited now to start treatments. But for some reason, we do wait until stage four indicators like a suicide attempt or expensive hospitalization or incarceration to say, oh, well, we knew something was going on. And so we know that if we can establish good public policy that respects the dignity of individuals and those family caregivers, that that's part of our before stage four commitment. And we find a way to do that nationally, statewide, and locally. through people who are part of MHA.
And I encourage folks that are listening to check out on social media and even on the website at mhanational.org. Your hashtag, the letter B, the number four, the word stage, and the number four. So B4 stage four campaign, because you're right. Unfortunately, we see statistically, sometimes it takes up to 10 years for someone who is first experiencing symptoms of mental illness to even reach out. And that the more that we can grab people and really give them the assistance and help they need as early as possible from the first indication of them experiencing symptoms, that the long-term outcomes are just drastically better for those individuals. So that is a big part of your of the work that you guys do, and I think it's to be commended.
Well, and you know, and that kind of filters down to everything else. I mean, some of our big public policy issues are, you know, parity, to mm-hmm. make sure that behavioral health is on par with physical health. And, you know, you hear people saying, well, I'm only allowed 10 visits to my therapist, or I have this insurance, but there's not enough providers in the network to see me for my behavioral health needs. I mean, there's all sorts of inequities or inequalities. And so nationally and in various states, we're really working hard for things like parity. Some of the other priorities are things like screenings and directing people to resources, or our back-to-school toolkits and making resources and position statements available for local communities so that they, you know, will be able to verbalize or have a written position on certain aspects of behavioral health.
Right, because policy makes a huge difference. Of course, with the Mental Health Parity and Addictions Equality Act of 2008, which was a bipartisan legislation passed on the federal side. You know, when you talk about states, the challenges for states, a lot of times that does not trickle down into state legislation or state policy, and we still have a long way to go when we look at mental health parity. A lot of times people equate it to, imagine if you had a symptoms of a heart attack or stroke, you would instantly be taken into a hospital and have full integrated care, and you would have people surrounding you all the way through that recovery process. But it does not happen, number one, in mental health, and it could be because of a myriad of reasons of stigma and lack of education, but also the way insurance treats mental illness, the way emergency rooms and just the entire overall ecosystem of care is not on par with other indications. So the work that you guys do is incredible. So let's kind of drill down a little bit. Since you guys are in Tennessee, you have really spread across a large portion of Tennessee and even some into Arkansas. What are some of the challenges that you're seeing maybe within Tennessee or from your viewpoint as a national that's happening in states what are some of the challenges that we're seeing on the state and local level when it comes to either mental health parity or stigma or just anything around this area?
Sure. Well, stigma is just that ancient barrier. That's our number one enemy, that by the time people probably, you know, call us or reach out to us, they've needed something 6 months or a year prior, and it's almost become a chronic physical ailment by now. But I will say Tennessee really has high marks when it comes to things like crisis services. When it comes to mobile crisis, suicide prevention, we have really spectacular crisis services. But again, that's not before stage four. That's at stage four, maybe stage three and a half. So we're always looking at how can we create these resources further upstream. I think that we're doing a really good job on some public policy and advocacy. We're doing really good on our screenings. There's about 10,000 screenings a year through the MHA in East Tennessee, and then our MHA of the Mid-South here in that covers Middle and West Tennessee. And those screenings online, they're evidence-based, free, anonymous, and the back end of those help to direct people to some resources. Some of those are even these DIY, do-it-yourself resources of how to connect, how to find more resources, how to support yourself when you're kind of in that pit. I think workplace wellness is another great area in which we're continuing to make strides in. In fact, we're now starting to piggyback on our national MHA. They have a bell seal for mindfulness in the workplace or workplace mental health. And I think that that's something that's becoming more and more interesting to a lot of companies. They realize that their employees aren't like employees of the past where they just love and grab hold of the Red Cross or the United Way or their favorite charity. Instead, we have to go to them, and we have to show these HR directors and these employees how to use your EAP, your Employment Assistance Program, how to manage corporate stress or depression, how to not just address maybe absenteeism, but even presenteeism when people might have an addiction or a mental health issue that they're showing up to work, but they're just paralyzed by what's going on in their lives at home, in a marriage, at work, after work. And we don't want them to self-medicate and to develop co-occurring issues. So workplace wellness is really starting to take off here in Tennessee as well.
It's interesting because, you know, I think we probably live in a society where more and more we are so intimately connected with what we do, and that our workplace environment is a big part of how we do, both mentally and physically, and vice versa, that we can easily bring in the stressors or trauma that we are experiencing outside of the workplace back into the workplace. And sometimes we expect schools and other institutions that are working with perhaps our children to be able to identify some of these things at a very early age. But I'm really glad that you guys are doing more work to bring that conversation open into the workplace as well, because it is a substantial part of people's identity and a place where a lot of times emotions can come out, and that and at least to have the resources to be able to seek help from employers or from their insurance company and make that a part of the integrated culture of organizations. So, are there any, just kind of wrapping things up, the work that you guys are doing in Tennessee, if you are finding some substantive programs that are able to work, do you guys draw from other areas around the country on programs and policies? And does MHA try to help duplicate some of those things throughout the nation at some of its other affiliates and state levels?
You know, it's funny because the way that I describe MHA is it's almost like the United Way of mental health. Some do housing, some do direct services like counseling or respite, or others do things like Alzheimer's and caregiver stress for Alzheimer's. So we're almost like that United Way of mental health that really looks at the local landscape and responds to that local flavor. And so just like a United Way, some of them support the Boy Scouts and some support Planned Parenthood and some support other organizations. Not all of them do. It just depends on that local area. So similarly, if you've seen one MHA, you may have just seen one MHA.
Correct.
But I do know that at the national level, they are working to kind of standardize some different programs. We all have access to the screenings. We have access to their bell seal for workplace wellness, the public policy. We're able to speak with our united voices on those. And I guess that's just how I would encourage some of your listeners is to reach out to the MHA, learn who all the partners are in the landscape, and find a way that you can be maybe a Minuteman, just like in the old days, that when the flag goes up or the lights, you know, in the tower, that you can respond by calling a legislator, leaving a voicemail for a legislator, raising some money, doing a Facebook fundraiser, or even just coming in and volunteering in person. I think that there's a lot of ways to do that, not just with MHA, but with some of our sister organizations as well, who we love to support and partner with.
That is absolutely inspiring, and it is absolutely true. Unfortunately, many times people that may be living living with mental illness, sometimes their voices get lost in the system. And it really is up to everyone, loved ones, coworkers, family members, peers, to step up and say, I will be that voice for you. And so you're absolutely right. So many different avenues that we can participate in, and so much great information to learn. And Mental Health America is an extremely progressive organization, always looking at the future. And I encourage everyone who's listening to please check out the website for MHA National at www.mhanational.org for the National Association. But also, if you want to find out what's happening right there in Middle Tennessee, at www.mhamt.org. Tom, I really appreciate you spending time with us today and sharing some of your knowledge. I hope we can get together and speak again, because I know that you have a very deep and wide breadth of knowledge when it comes to advocacy and mental health and some other areas as well. But I really appreciate you spending time with us today.
Well, I want to thank you, Luke, and the STAR Coalition, too. We appreciate your partnership and your hard work.
Thank you so much. Well, listen, thanks again for joining us today on the STAR Coalition podcast. As again, we'd like to get together with thought leaders, of course, like Tom and others, and really discuss topics that we believe affect each and every one of us. So continue to follow the STAR Coalition on social media and on our website at www.thestar.org. And until then, we'll see you soon. Thank you.